Hello, lovely audience. My name is Gail Miller.
I'm Pastor Rachel.
And this is the second episode of Mystify God's Saltiest Women. And today we are talking about one of my favorite historical women of all time, Sor Juana Inez de la Cruz. I'm so sorry, Pastor Salvador, if I mispronounce anything in this podcast. I'm trying my ding-dang hardest.
Amazing. I'm so excited. So this is the woman that you had in mind when you came to me with this idea, right?
So yeah. I've known about this woman for, I think, as long as you've been in this church.
Okay,
so for context, I'm annoying.
I wouldn't say that. I would never say that.
My friends say that sometimes. And 2 or 3 years ago, I had this huge phase where I, like, actually liked learning about things. Crazy, I know.
Wild.
So I was super into Ted Ed, like, just miscellaneously watching those videos, and I came across one that was called History's Worst Nun. And I was like, oh Lord, what did this woman do this time? And then I found out that I really liked her, and she was connected to the church, which was even better.
Amazing.
And that was around the time that you joined Grace Lutheran, and so I was like, dude, I want Pastor Rachel to talk about this girl, but now I'm actually teaching Pastor Rachel about
even
this
better.
Yeah,
even better.
So that I've known about this woman for a long time. I don't see a lot of myself in her, but I see a lot of the qualities that I want to reach for in her. Like, I want to be like her in a lot of different ways, especially because she's a writer. And I told Pastor Rachel this earlier, but I'm writing a book, and I struggle with writer's block and, like, you know, imposter syndrome and all that. So I admire her writing, especially in a time when it wasn't popular.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm already in love with Juana. This is amazing.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, so I'm already hearing in what little you've said that I think she might be your patron saint of writing. So, like, anytime you have writer's block, you can just be like, Juana,
please,
and
she can. Help me.
Amazing. Okay, yes. Tell me more about her.
Okay, so let me pull this up. So, coming straight out of the gate with an interesting fact, Sor Juana Inez de la Cruz was not her birth name. Like, she was not born with that name. From the sources that I read, well, there's a lot of options. I combed through a lot of sources. I found two. Juana Ramirez de Esbaje, Doña Inez de Esbaje de Ramirez de Santinala, or, like, some combination of the two.
Okay.
So throughout this podcast, I'm just going to refer to her as Sor Juana or just Juana, just to make it simpler.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what name she was actually born with.
Sure.
Or
which name she preferred.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I only know that she changed her name when, spoiler alert, she changed her name when she entered the church. Okay. So that was obviously something that she picked and that she wanted.
Sure.
So the year that Juana was born is not, like, totally, like, set in stone, like, it's complete fact, but from what I saw, it was usually found 1648, and she was born November 12th, and she's a Scorpio, if you care about that sort
Love
of thing.
Love it.
And she was born in a place called, I'm so sorry, Pastor Salvador, San Miguel de Planta, New Spain, or as it's now known, Tepetlixpa, Mexico.
Okay.
And I've already said both 1648 and New Spain.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, Mexico has been a Spanish colony for 127 years, if I'm counting correctly.
Okay.
So by this time, Mexico has, or as it's known then, New Spain, has a very complex class system with both, like, indigenous Mexican people and Spanish people. So we're gonna start off with Juana's grandparents. Their names are Pedro Ramirez de Santinala and Beatriz Rendon, and they were both native Spanish people. They came from Spain and they came into Mexico, and so I'm not exactly sure how. I didn't do research on, like, the history of Mexican colonization and all that stuff.
Right.
But for some reason, this put them in a very, like, high class. Like, they were very affluent. They were very rich. They lived very comfortably because they were Spanish. And they had 11 kids, one of which was a woman named Doña Isabel de Ramirez. And all 13 of them. I had to do a mental math. I'm really stupid. I'm sorry.
No, you are not.
Stop. All 13 of them are considered Creole.
Yeah.
I think I pronounced that right. I'm so sorry. Creole.
Okay.
And so Doña Isabel's future daughter, Juana, would be considered the same thing. So Juana Inez de la Cruz is also Creole.
Okay.
So Doña had three children with a Spanish military officer named Pedro Manuel Esbaje y Vargas Machua. I think I pronounced that right. But he disappeared from Doña's life. He left her. And she tried again with another Spanish military officer named Diego Ruiz Lozanzo, and had another three kids with him. And then he dipped as well.
Oh no.
And like, I feel awful for her, but I also like, I understand what it's like to have a type that doesn't work out for you. With her, it's like Spanish military officers, and with me, it's like intelligent older brothers. So, I get it, girl. I'm sorry, but you gotta recognize yourself.
Right. Maybe some self-reflection.
Right. Maybe do some spiritual healing from like all the men giving you kids. And of course, it's 1648. So you'd think like after she has six kids and two male partners who have dipped, she'd be in trouble. But because of her parents, you know, being Spanish and her parents being super high on like the Mexican class system or whatever, she's actually able to give her kids and herself a very nice life. And her father owns two hacienda chapels, I think I pronounced that correctly, and she basically ran one of them. Despite the fact that she was illiterate and a woman, which is like a total girl boss move.
Yeah, totally.
So, respect to Doña for like absolutely killing it.
No kidding.
So,
and having six kids.
Yeah!
Which is a lot.
That is quite a large amount of kids. Yeah. Bless her soul. So we'll take it back to Juana, because I've talked a lot about her parents and her grandparents. So Juana, when she was a little girl, she was very smart. Very, very, very smart. She took the term Niño Prodigio and ran with it. And she was also very, like, connected to the church as a kid. When she was 3 years old, she was baptized, much like me. And on her baptism roll, because they had those things back in the day.
Yes.
Crazy. She was dubbed the daughter of the church, which I think is, like, very, like, what a flex. And it seemed to be a blessing from the Lord, and it probably gave her like superhuman intelligence. So when Juana was three, you could usually find her in her granddad's library, which I think was like connected to one of the hacienda chapels. And you know, girls weren't supposed to be reading at this time, so like it's very scandalous, especially for a three-year-old. But she put it to good use. And by the time she was 3 years old, she could already read and write in Latin.
In Latin?
In Latin.
Oh my god.
Right.
Making the rest of us look bad.
I know.
Wow.
And then when she was eight, she wrote an entire poem on the Last Supper.
Okay.
I know!
Okay.
I know!
Okay.
And then when she was 13, which is like 2 years younger than me. Making me look bad.
I don't even want to tell you how many years younger that is than me, but go ahead. And there are people who are listening who are both going to say that we're both very young. So, like, very young.
13, very, very, very young. Very young.
Yes. Good
Pretty
for
much
her.
Just like popped out of the womb. But, you know. But by 13, she learned the Aztec language Nahuatl. I think I pronounced that right. And she was teaching younger kids Latin. Like teaching them how to read and write Latin.
Wow.
Right? She's
Incredible.
Yeah, absolutely crazy intelligence. she was pretty much like glued inside her granddad's library, which is why she knows all of this stuff.
Right.
And when she was like my age, which is about, for viewers, 15 to 16, she found out that I read this specific like phrase, which I'm going to like speculate. Secondary education, which I'm assuming is college.
Sure. Yeah.
She found out that it was available for men, but men exclusively, and she begged her mom to let her Mulan her way into a degree.
Amazing.
I know. And amazing. Her mom said no.
Oh, come on, mom.
Right.
Just let her be Mulan.
Exactly. Run a hacienda chapel. The least you could do is let your daughter like bring you even more of a flex. Like,
right.
I run a chapel and my sister, or and my daughter got a degree. Like,
right. That would have been really cool.
That would have been really cool.
And we all understand that we're, you know, products of our time. So.
Yeah.
Such is life.
So she rebelled in her granddad's library because she was salty. Aha, plug.
Yeah.
but she was so smart. Like, she pretty much became notorious for, like, being super duper intelligent.
Sure.
And do you know what a viceroy is?
I do in Star Wars. I don't know what it is in, like, real world.
Right, in, like, historical...
Right, know. Like, it's an actual human being.
Right.
Yeah.
So, a viceroy, or I think the feminine term is, like, a viceroy.
Okay.
In colonization, you know, there's obviously, like, these places are usually, like, super far apart, like, you know, oceans apart, like Spain and Mexico, ocean apart.
Yeah.
So there's the king of Spain, and then he will send a viceroy over to Mexico to act as, like, you know, telephone, like, all of the rule. Like, the viceroy is basically puppeting Mexico for the king. She was so smart that she had caught the attention of the viceroy and his wife. The wife's name being Doña Eleonora del Corredo, who was a rich Italian lady. Oh my goodness, flavor.
Love it.
And then Don Antonio Sebastian de Toledo, who was the viceroy.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 16, they took her under their wing as a lady in waiting. She was a lady in waiting when she was 16 years old.
Okay.
Very fancy.
Very fancy.
Yes. But you'd think, like, you know, if you're working in the court as a woman in the 1600s, you'd be forced to give up your writing.
Right.
But no, she did not do that at all. She, if anything, engaged more heavily in her writing.
Amazing.
And, you know, because this is something she carried with her throughout her entire life. But, you know, as a teenager, you're especially feisty. You're especially, like, you know, provocative or whatever. Mm-hmm. So she wrote like scandalous stuff, which is basically just like very critical stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing you will learn about her throughout me talking about her is she wrote pretty much every type of writing she could get her hands on. Plays, poems, comedies. She wrote stuff on philosophy. She wrote essays.
Wow.
Literally like every type of writing you can think of, she probably did something in that vein.
Okay. Genre.
Right.
Yeah.
But most of it when she was a teenager was like very scandalous, very provocative.
Sure.
And in this time period in her life, I believe, she wrote her most famous work of all time called Hombres Necios, or Foolish Men.
Okay.
And it's basically her just like, you know, criticizing men for having the double standard of like blaming women for immorality when they're in the positions of power and they're the
Love this.
Like something that would have not flied in her time period.
Yep.
And so obviously it did not fly.
It did not fly.
Like people were furious with her, but she was so good at writing that she drew people in no matter what she wrote.
Yeah.
Even if it was stuff like Hombre en el Cielo, you know, she could still get people to be, like, enraptured with her and her writing. What a slay.
Love it.
And then when she hit 17, Don Antonio decided to basically be kind of a jerk to her. And he held a meeting with a good handful, from what I've read in my sources, most likely 40. Okay. Super smart, like mathematicians, philosophers, poets, jurors. I think somewhere I read that there was like a bunch of doctors invited. Basically, think of like every occupation that it requires you to be super smart.
Yeah.
He invited like the best of the best in Mexico to a meeting, and they all quizzed Juana, like exclusively.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. As 17.
Yeah.
Like not even old enough to like graduate high school in today's standards, and she has like 40 of the Mexico's smartest people quizzing her.
Amazing.
And she not only was able to answer all of the questions, but sometimes she even caught them like in their falsehoods.
Love this.
Right.
Love this.
And she stunned everyone in the room. Like, she shocked everyone. Wow. And one of my favorite quotes about her was people in that room later likened her to, quote, a galleon fending off a few canoes. And I am
That's amazing.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I especially like this quote because I'm super into pirates, so I know tons about galleons and stuff. So, like, hearing her referred to as a galleon, it just makes my pirate-loving heart swell.
Yes.
And it was a booster in Juana's notoriousness, obviously. Because when you get quizzed by, like, 40 of the smartest people in Mexico, people are going to hear about it.
Right.
And so word spread far and wide, and she got visited by some prominent scholars of the time and befriended them. And, you know, she became very, very notorious and very well respected. I mean, obviously people still didn't like the fact that she wrote Hombre de Necios or whatever, but they were like, she's kind of cool.
Yeah. Begrudging respect.
Yes. And she even got a few marriage proposals.
Okay.
But she turned them all down because she did not want to dedicate her time to a man when she could be putting her nose in a book.
Preach.
Preach, queen.
No.
So, yep.
I love you, husband of mine, but also, he understands how much I love you.
Exactly. Yeah. Future husband of mine, I'm sorry, but you're gonna have to deal with it. Obviously, though, if she had said, like, I'd rather put my nose in a book than being attentive to a man, she would have gotten absolutely obliterated. Mm-hmm. So she turned to the place that she loved and adored the most, the church, where she could maintain her respectability and her independence. And so when Juana was 20 years old in 1667, she joined St. Joseph's Church and then left and quickly moved into the Hieronymite Covenant Church.
Okay.
And from what I've read, this is speculation to the listeners, this isn't true facts. When she joined the Hieronymite Church, it was like a lot less restrictive, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, she was able to have her own apartment, she could teach drama and Latin to young girls at the Santa Paula School, and she was just given more time to read and write.
Sure.
So that's why I think she left the original church, but it's never confirmed. That's just my guess. And this is also the time that she changed her name to what we know her as now, Sor Juana Inez de la Cruz. And she most likely did this as a nod to Sor Juana de la Cruz Vasquez Gutierrez, who was the first nun allowed to preach the gospel.
Amazing.
I know. What a great person to name yourself after.
I love that.
So she continues to write and to write and to write. Like, that's just what she's known for. That's the thing that she loves most in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And she's accredited, like I said earlier, for like having the widest range of any nun or anyone in her time. And plug, if you want to go look at her work, which I'd highly recommend, it's all on like Britannica and stuff.
Sure.
And my favorite work of hers is My Lady. It's a romance poem. It's like very in depth and very like sweet and caring and stuff.
Aww.
So little plug for her.
My Lady. Okay, I'm gonna try that.
Okay. So she wrote like a bunch, as I just said. And her library was so bountiful and expansive that she attracted even like more prominent scholars of the time and befriended even more cool people. Amazing. And she just had so much, like such a an abundance of books and writing and gadgets and like all these different things. And it was pretty smooth sailing for a good 20 years.
Yeah.
But obviously good things don't last forever, unfortunately. Yeah. So in 1690, her downfall would begin, unfortunately. A bishop by the name of Manuel Fernandez de Santa Cruz, I'm calling you out specifically here, dude, found and published Sor Juana's private critique of a well-respected sermon. It was like 40 years old, so it was preached a lot of different times, from Father Antonio Vieira. And he titled it Carta Athenagorsia, I think I pronounced that right, or the Arthagoras. I love how I have a harder time pronouncing it in English than Spanish. Arthenagorical letter. There we go. And it's Sor Juana scholars today still have a very hard time figuring out like what her criticisms truly were in that letter. But like the basic understanding of it was her like talking about how the hierarchies in the church aren't great, like
sure.
Religious authorities, not a slave. And so along with Carta Athenagorsia, he published his own letter along with it, and he ripped into her for like, you know, having thoughts,
right.
Yeah, for engaging in critical thought and criticizing another pastor and you know, secular studies rather than just being a blind obedient servant to God.
Right.
And he, I think this is a direct quote, but I'm not sure, he said that she needs to give up writing in order to devote herself to true prayer.
Interesting.
Gross.
Yeah, it's interesting, disgusting, but like,
yeah,
the plot thickens. Because,
the plot thickens.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And here's the kicker.
Yeah.
Here's what really gets me about this incident.
Mm-hmm.
He at some point admitted to agreeing with most of the points that she made in that letter of his sermon.
Of course he did.
Right!
Of course he did.
But, you know, it came from a woman, so,
right.
Like, how dare she engage in critical thought? And so, obviously, my girl was not going to let that slide. Like, it was just
no.
not going to happen. And so she published Respuesta a Sor Filotea de la Cruz, or A Reply to Sister Filotea, and advocated for women's education and the autonomy and authority of their own intellect and critical thought.
Mm-hmm.
She especially advocated for, like, older women,
mm-hmm.
you know, being educated so that
yeah.
they may teach younger generations of...
I love that.
Yeah. I didn't even think of that at first.
Yeah.
You know, when you advocate for women's education, you think, like, all women.
Right.
But, like, having older women to educate younger women, that's
yeah.
great thinking.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to borrow this directly from TED Ed because I think they put it perfectly. To sum up what she said in her reply, she basically just said, like, God wouldn't have given women intellect if they didn't want them to use it.
Oh, I love this.
Right.
I love this a
yeah.
lot. Yep.
We love Sor Juana. And... of course, unfortunately, this caught the attention of the Archbishop of Mexico.
Yeah.
And this is where it gets hazy, I'm sure, because of, like, you know, this was all done very quietly and
mm-hmm.
stuff. But she was forced to give up her writing. She was censored, like,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of her gadgets and her books like randomly disappeared, and her writings were nowhere to be found. I think there's only like a handful of books and writings that have still been saved today.
Sure.
But it's still like way more than, you know, what you would expect from a nun at the time.
Yeah.
And She became incredibly disliked and scorned. She brought the very negative part into the word notorious. There's not a lot of records of this, but it didn't seem to tamper her fiery spirit. One of her male colleagues said that she had too much waywardness, because she said, and I'm quoting her directly here, "One can perfectly well philosophize while making supper."
I love that.
That's what reminded me from last episode.
Yes.
Yes.
I also, I now aspire to be told I have too much waywardness. I don't know what that means.
But right. Like, that sounds more like a compliment than an insult.
100%.
Yeah. But unfortunately, virtually by the time that, like, 1693 hit, she stopped writing.
Okay.
And she began to engage in acts of, this sounds so scandalous, penance.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or repentance. And again, speculation, sorry, diehard Sor Juana fans who, like, stick to the facts and the facts only. I don't think she actually meant them. One of the acts of penance that she had to do was, like, renew her vows as a nun.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so petty. We love her for this. She was so petty. When doing so, she cut herself open with a knife and signed it in her own blood.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's intense.
And I haven't even gotten to the best part yet.
Oh my gosh, tell me.
So when I first learned this from TED Ed, the phrase was wrong. They got the phrase wrong in the video.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad I ended up doing research on this girl and, like, actually finding the true phrase. Because when I first learned it, she signed her vows, "I, the worst of all." Which is already pretty cool, right?
That's really, like, cool. Yeah.
That's so petty, so passive aggressive, so, like, you know, like, screw you.
Right.
But it gets better. What she actually wrote was, I can't do Spanish. "Yo la peor de todas," or "I, the worst of all women."
That's
Isn't that
even
awesome?
Cooler.
Yeah.
Somehow that's even cooler.
The one word makes all the difference.
It does make a big difference, yeah.
But, unfortunately, she did really take the phrase "go out with a bang" and run with it, because I think, if I'm guessing correctly, that was the last thing she ever wrote.
Okay.
And so she was completely censored and was forced to, like, you know, never touch a book again, never touch a pen again. So she threw herself into charity work. She took care of other nuns and her sisters and her siblings, and she died of taking care of another nun. A lot of the sources that I read said it was from the plague, but I'm pretty sure that the plague was, like, 300 years before this.
Right.
So
maybe a different plague? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But it definitely was not the plague that I was thinking of.
Right.
So Sor Juana became, obviously years later, known as the first feminist of the Americas.
Okay.
She has been put on Mexico's 200 peso note. She's accrued, like, the most, I was almost gonna say a curse word, the most amazing nicknames, such as the Phoenix of Mexico, the 10th Muse, and obviously from TED Ed, History's Worst Nun.
I love that.
And she was just, like, a pioneer in feminism, and, like, she definitely, like, she did not let her relationship her relationship with other people, like, get in the way with her relationship with God. I admire her because she never, like, even when she was censored, she never stopped believing in what she thought was right.
Yeah.
So anyway, that is Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz.
Amazing.
Thank cute.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my goodness. Do you have any questions on her or anything?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure once I like re-listen to this episode, I'll have so many more questions, which is another reason to go do more research.
Exactly.
Dear listeners.
Put your nose in a book.
Exactly. Listen to Sohwana and put your nose in a book. But I was just gonna say my gratitude to Sohwana is that she was the first in so many ways, and we all know how hard it is to be the first.
Right.
And so gratitude for her for being the first, like, first feminist of the Americas. Like,
right.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
First woman probably ever to be questioned by 40 incredibly intelligent men.
Right. To have a meeting of that magnitude.
Right. First 3-year-old I've ever heard of to teach herself Latin or, like, learn how to
right.
speak.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
The first in so many ways. That alone is incredible. And I'm so grateful to the women in her life, I'm thinking specifically of her mom.
Yeah.
Like, yes, her mom didn't let her go to college. And at the same time, her mom was the first in terms of multiple partners
mm-hmm.
and being able to run, you said it was
a hacienda chapel
that she was able to run on her own.
Right.
So
being illiterate and a woman, that
exactly.
is a huge accomplishment.
Huge. And to then raise 6 kids and, like, all these things. I'm grateful to Salt. I'm grateful to Sohwana for both her firsts, but also for
her family's firsts.
Her family's firsts for learning from her family. It's a reminder to me that none of us are. There's a great, great mystic named Thomas Merton, and one of his most famous books is that no man is an island. I would expand it to say no human is an island.
Exactly.
But the idea being that none of us are the first in anything without the people behind us and the people with us.
Right.
So.
And adding on to that, I think I already kind of did a gratitude to
you did,
Sohwana.
But I didn't mean to jump. But
no. That's
yeah.
I had a gratitude, like, props to the, like, scholars that would come and visit her throughout her life and learn from her.
Yeah.
When I'm sure learning from a woman other than, like, you know, like, a teacher or, like, a nun or something
right.
was uncommon. Like, putting
yeah.
a woman in a position of power to teach you, especially about things that were, like, not about religion, like,
right.
drama and, like, philosophy. Like,
yeah.
I don't... That's crazy. So
yeah.
props to the men and the women who would come and, like, learn from her. That's
like,
awesome.
It's a total flex to say, like, in that time period, I'm a woman with students.
Like, right.
That's huge.
I'm a teacher, but outside of the classroom.
Right, exactly. And to
yeah.
have people who recognize that in her and said,
mm-hmm.
affirmed that by being like, yeah, I want to learn. Like, I'm sitting at your feet, teach me.
Right.
Is really cool.
All of my knowledge is in your hands, basically.
Right.
Yeah, the guys who gave her marriage proposals were very right in their judgment.
They were right thinking. Yep.
Yeah.
She might have also been right to turn them down because she didn't need them, but, you know.
Exactly.
Amazing. Well, thank you for bringing Sohwana to us.
Of course.
This is incredible.
Thank you, Ted Ed, for introducing me to her, or else I would have never done this.
Love Ted Ed.
We love
so
Ted.
Many great videos. Speaking of... We are not endorsed by Ted Ed.
No,
but
this isn't sponsored.
This is not sponsored. However, go check out Ted Ed. They've got great videos.
We love Ted Ed.
Love it. Thank you again for joining us for another great episode of Miss Defy, God's Saltiest Women. Tune in next week. We'll have another great woman to discuss and to learn about.
My goodness.
Thanks for journeying with us, you guys. Take care.
Bye.